Hi, hello, welcome to another episode of the Gaze Into the Blue Light podcast. Every week we discuss notable books, movies, TV shows, video games, etc., etc. Anything you can find on your screens, putting off that gorgeous blue light. Welcome. This week we have a great episode for you. Nikki has brought a delightful little book to share. I have a sci-fi apocalyptic-ish movie to chat about. Plus, we've got this week's news and what we've been watching on the television. I've got my coffee. I'm here. You're here.
I'm here.
Nikki's here. Scrappy the dog is here. Let's get to it. We're here, finally.
We're finally here.
Have the giggles subsided?
We had to take a quick break for laundry and a giggle fit, so I think we're good now.
You're set. All right.
We're set.
So, it's been one heck of a week.
It's been a week, yeah. It really has. What even happened this week?
I don't remember that a week actually happened.
Oof. I know, I was actually talking to my gram about that this week. I was like, I feel like during the pandemic, which has been almost a year now, time has gone so fast. Like, it's so weird because how can time go so quickly when we're just at the house all the time?
I don't know.
Do you feel like it's gone really fast?
I do feel like it's gone really fast.
It's just like a blur of time.
Yeah.
Just kind of bleeds into, like, one day, one week, one month, like, just bleeds into the next.
Yeah, I think we're missing, like, big timeline events.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, Super Bowl Sunday.
It's Super Bowl Sunday.
I say that like I'm a huge football fan, but Super Bowl Sunday to me means food, so.
You're more a fan of events than the specific reason behind the events.
That's exactly right, yep.
So what do you have planned?
Well, I bought yesterday at the grocery store a Kansas City Chiefs balloon. I was gonna buy, that's not all I have planned. I bought a balloon, I put it up, that's it. I was gonna buy both, but I thought, no, I'm just gonna buy the team that I hope wins. And I bought a bunch of food. It was an absolute madhouse at the grocery store yesterday because we were expecting a huge snowstorm today, which we are currently getting, and I am thrilled. And it's Super Bowl Sunday, so people were nutty. Like, it was like supermarket sweep, like carts running into each other. It was no social distancing was happening, like, at all. So yeah, but I'm gonna make chili. I'm gonna make a white chicken chili. I'm gonna make Hasselbeck potatoes, which I've never made before, loaded.
Can you briefly describe the Hasselbeck potato?
Yes. So basically you take russet potatoes, and then I learned a really good hack for how to, like, you're looking to slice them thinly, maybe like a quarter to a half inch slices, but you don't want the slices to go the whole way through. You want the potato to still be intact, but sort of like an accordion at the top, if you will, if you can picture that. So basically the hack that I learned from Padma Lakshmi is take the potato, put two wooden spoons down on a cutting board, put the potato in between the wooden spoons, and then cut down, and the knife will hit the wooden spoons, keeping it from going the whole way down through the potato. So basically what you do then is you can take a mixture of like oil, salt, pepper, spices, and like you sort of rub it in between all the cut layers, and then you bake it, and then you can put other stuff on top, like I'm putting bacon, cheese, chives, sour cream, dill, So it's going to be awesome. I'm also making baked chicken wings with a dry rub. And I got these crazy chips that are bacon jalapeno popper flavored Lay's.
Wow.
It seemed fun. And beer. Of course, beer for the Super Bowl.
I guess there's going to be a game happening too.
Yeah, I mean, I might just eat so much that I just need to go to bed, but
well, there's a game. I can't wait, and snow is falling outside. Mm. It's the Super Bowl is on, and good food is happening, so I personally couldn't be happier.
I know, it's like the best Sunday ever.
Best Sunday ever.
What's your Super Bowl prediction?
My Super Bowl prediction, I think that the Chiefs will win.
Do you?
Yes, but I think it's going to be very close.
Okay.
I'm hoping for a very close, back and forth, exciting game.
Yeah.
Where I slam my fist down and curse Tom Brady's name repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
And then Patrick Mahomes does one of my favorite little plays where they have their tight end run across and he does a little underarm little shuffle pass thing to him.
Mm-hmm.
I love it when they do that, and they're gonna get in and win, and it's gonna be great.
That's awesome. It's a good prediction. I mean, I hope they win, but you know, it's Tom Brady and he just can do no wrong. Like, he's just one of those people that you just hate, right?
Are you making a Super Bowl prediction that Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will win?
Yes, as much as I like don't want them to win, they're gonna win just because it's Tom Brady, and like he has made some kind of like deal with the devil to just, you know, he's just one of those people, right? He's like so good at football, he can never not be good. He's never gonna retire. He's handsome. He's married to Giselle. I mean, come on. He's probably charming and like is probably like does like charity work for children and like donated a kidney to like a child with cancer or something. He's just like one of those people where it's just like, come on.
Okay.
You can stop now.
Do you want to propose a Super Bowl bet then?
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
So here's what I bet. Mm-hmm. If the Chiefs win, I control the remote for the TV, and we only watch what I want to watch for the whole week.
For the whole week?
And if the Buccaneers win, you control the TV remote, and we only watch what you want to watch for the whole week.
So are you saying, like, Monday through Sunday, or Monday through, like, the work week, or, like, the actual calendar week?
For a week from the Super Bowl. So, like, Monday to Sunday. You're in control.
Oh, man. Oh, it's on. Get ready to watch House Hunters International. Okay.
All right, we're shaking on it.
Okay.
Oh, God.
How many hours? Like, there has to be some limit. Like, how many hours per day?
I don't know.
Like, okay, it's fine. We don't need to get so
specific. We will do a lot of watching what you want to watch if the Bucks win.
Okay. All right.
Which is frightening. That's a lot of House Hunters International.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Get ready for it.
The worst show ever made.
It's not the worst show ever made. Why do you dislike it?
It's... I don't like the music. I don't like the host's voice.
Dun, 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 dun.
I don't like how they just repeat the same thing over and over.
They do make you feel like you're like... I don't know how to say
just
this
really
in a delicate
stupid
way. Yeah, really stupid.
They just play the same clips over and over again. The people are always annoying. Anyway.
What if I just forwarded it to like the last 10 minutes of each episode? Because then it basically recaps everything. Would you be happy then?
That's how to watch House Hunters shows, is you just fast forward to the end and then they show you all the same things that they've been showing you over and over again. They recap everything and it's the pick.
Well, because I think it was, we don't need to go down a rabbit hole on this, but like I think it was because it was made for TV. So it was made to have commercials. So I think it's made so that you can just like jump in at any point and be like, oh, like I don't have to watch the whole thing. Like,
well,
they're going to recap it.
Made stupidly.
Well, I love it because I like to see what you can get for your money in different places.
Well, next week's episode, if you win the bet, you can talk till you're blue in the face about all the great House Hunter International episodes we watch. Speaking of television,
yeah,
just real quickly, the two shows that we've been really devouring lately, WandaVision.
Yes.
And Servant.
Whoa.
On Apple TV Plus. What are your thoughts on Servant?
Oh my gosh, it is crazy. It's intense. I love it because it's based in Philadelphia. I didn't know M. Night Shyamalan was from Philadelphia, but I feel like he does a really nice job of showcasing the city and like having it come up in conversation a lot. So I really love that. It's so creepy. They just still aren't giving anything away. There's so many like mysteries and it is just so intense. I think the acting is amazing.
So far.
Ooh, it's so creepy.
What's your creepiest moment? And it's not horror. It's not scary. No, it's just not, creepy and weird.
It's a psychological thriller. I guess I should give a brief like description. So basically, without giving too much away, so basically this couple have a baby and then something happens to the baby, which we still don't know. And they're sort of giving little like hints here and there, but the baby dies. And then the woman, the mom, is so distraught by it, which of course you would be, that she engages in some type of therapy, which I can't remember the name of at this point, but basically they like, she sort of goes into like a psychotic break and they sub in a baby doll. That's meant to be like a brief therapy where she can kind of get, you know, back on her feet, but while thinking the baby is still alive in this form of a baby doll. And then they hire this nanny who comes in, and then a bunch of really creepy stuff starts to happen. What is the creepiest part? I think the religion part of it is really scary for me, because it's so like feels very realistic, and how she like it feels like she's sort of like putting these religious like curses on people. So that feels really creepy to me because it feels like that could happen in real life. I don't know.
I think the creepiest moment so far for me was when all the crickets were in her bed.
Yeah, that was weird.
Ugh, gross.
It's intense. I highly recommend it if you have Apple TV. It's really good.
I will say one downfall that I've been thinking of is that, and I haven't watched a ton of Apple TV Plus shows. We did watch Defending Jacob, which was good.
Yeah, that was good.
But I hope that they get out of their, well, we only really watched two of the shows, and both of them have been like rich white families in very rich houses using Apple products. Like well placed, but still they do a lot of FaceTiming on iPads.
See, I didn't notice that, but now that you say that,
there's a lot of Apple rings. They use their phones all the time. They're always texting and FaceTiming.
Oh my god. Wow. See, I think you're more observant of those kind of things than me, like of advertisements and just like the placement of things. I don't think about that stuff as much as you do, but now that you point it out, it's so true. I guess to be fair, we haven't looked at a lot of what the other shows are, so maybe they are like, there are more like representative shows, but I mean, for sure, these are like the Servant. They're like the richest white people like ever. Like they have to live in Rittenhouse, gorgeous, like huge brownstone. His job is so interesting to me, which is another reason I like it. He does like menu recipe development and planning for Philadelphia restaurants. So he, you know, tries out a bunch of really amazing ingredients and like photographs it. So I think the food scenes are so interesting, and the way that like the camera angles are so good. But yeah, agreed. Give it a try.
Yeah, good stuff so far. And they come out with new episodes every week. Mm-hmm. Also coming out with new episodes every week is our other favorite show, WandaVision.
Yeah.
On Disney Plus. You probably heard about WandaVision. I think we just watched the fifth episode.
Yeah, I think
they
so.
They release new episodes every week.
Mm-hmm.
Also, another weird show with a lot of questions and little Marvel Easter eggs and a lot of connections to the Marvel movies and universe and things like that. So, but I would say even I had a passing knowledge of Marvel characters and things like
none.
That.
Yeah.
And you had none, and we both seem to enjoy it equally. They're nice, short little episodes. Mm-hmm. They're fun to watch. They come out on Fridays. I really like the idea of, like, being excited that it's Friday and a new episode's coming out.
And The Servant is on Fridays as well. We're still catching up. But, yeah, I like that, too. That's a shift from the whole, like, here's the whole season, binge it.
Yeah.
So that's, I like that better, actually. Remember when we used to, like... Another real weird show from the past is Lost. And do you remember we used to get so excited about watching that every week?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that show was really crazy.
From the beginning, WandaVision has reminded me of Lost.
Yeah, that's why I brought that up.
Yeah, It has a Lost feeling of like, there's a little campiness, a little silliness to it.
Yeah.
But then there's always this underlying thing of like, something is going on behind the scenes here.
Mm-hmm.
What is going on? And the characters encounter little things that they see or someone says and they're like, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the feeling that the characters in the show also don't know what's happening.
Yeah. And you get the sense that like some larger force or like being is in control of everything. And they don't know, like they're being like manipulated, like a Truman Show kind of situation.
I love those shows where they leave you for a whole week to speculate on what's been going on. And you can jump online and like read everybody's theories and all that kind of stuff. So we've been enjoying Servant and WandaVision. We'll keep checking in on how we are going with those. Stoked about the Super Bowl coming up. Stoked about eating.
Stoked about the snow.
And exciting snow. What
are you as excited about the snow as me? I've been loving being back in the Northeast and having snow for the winter.
I like when snow is falling and when snow has just fallen. And then I have a strong dislike for the long period afterwards where the snow is just sitting there and it's gross and it's icy and people don't shovel their sidewalk and you can't drive anywhere and it turns black and gross and muddy and the dog is disgusting when you come back.
I don't like that part of it either, but I do. I've liked having seasons and I've liked a winter that has something other than rain, which is what we had in the Pacific Northwest. So I like having sunshine and snow and just something different. And my biggest gripe about the snow is that this is a public service announcement. People think that they can just let their dogs poop in the snow and that the snow disappears the poop. It does not. If you have a dog, clean up the dog's poop in the snow. Thank you very much. I hate that. That's all I have to say about that.
Public service announcement number one.
Clean up your dog's poop.
Contrary to popular belief, snow does not make poop actually disappear.
No, it absolutely does not.
It is there when the snow melts.
It actually makes it worse. Anyway, please don't do that.
Talk less about dog poop.
Okay, sorry guys. We'll talk less about that. It's just one of my big gripes in life.
Hey, it happens. Okay? I personally like it when you talk about the special place in hell where those people
There is a special... Those people have a table for one in hell. People that don't clean up their dog poop in the snow or not, there is a special place in hell for them.
So if you're listening and you don't clean up your dog's poop, you will be treated to a life, not a lifetime, an eternity in hell.
You have a reservation waiting for you for one in hell. Enjoy.
Have fun with that. Enjoy being in hell forever. Transition time.
Oh yeah, sorry, dark times. Let's keep it light.
Let's get to our news segment.
Okay.
If you're not familiar with the show, first time listener, welcome. So in the news segment, we each bring an article that we think is really interesting. So do you want to go first?
I went first last time and you were all like, oh, well, I don't know how to go after. Oh. So if you want to go first, you can.
I'll go first. Fine. So this article is from CNET.com, mm-hmm. and I'll put the link in the show's description if you want to read it. But it is from CNET, February 1st, 2021. They are doing a series of articles called Welcome to Mars. And it's a series that explores all things having to do with Mars, the red planet. And this news story is about a satellite that is going to reach Mars on February 9th.
Wow.
Which is coming up here in a couple of days. So it's called the HOPE satellite, or Al-Amal. Or HOPE satellite. It is one of a few different missions to Mars that happened in 2020. NASA sent a rover to go to Mars. Chinese Space Agency sent a rover to go to Mars. They're looking for ancient life on the surface of the red planet. But this one, the HOPE satellite, is led by the United Arab Emirates. And it's special for a couple different reasons. The first reason is because it does not contain a rover or a lander and doesn't actually go to the surface of Mars. Hmm. It's circling the red planet for months, and it will be measuring things about the unusual atmosphere of Mars.
Interesting.
It is also important because the HOPE satellite is the first interplanetary mission led by an Arab Muslim majority country.
Wow.
So the satellite launched in July, and it's set to arrive at the 50th anniversary of the United Arab Emirates. And it's been I don't think it's news to anyone that the Middle East region, there are a lot of areas that have a lot of anti-government protests, mm-hmm. uprisings, war, terrorist organizations. And so it's can be a tough time and a tough place for young people to grow up and find educational opportunities. Mm. And so young people are kind of in a place where they're demanding, you know, more from their governments for more opportunities. This HOPE Mars mission, aka Emirates Mars mission, 90% of the team members are 35 and under.
Wow. That's awesome.
It's resulted in a boost in space exploration related jobs throughout the country. Universities are recruiting faculty for positions related to Mars and planetary science. There's a UAE Space Agency. And so it's kind of a huge effort there within the United Arab Emirates. Hmm. They're making history. And I think one thing that is always interesting to me about space stuff is that it always seems to be a global kind of effort.
Yeah.
And there's the International Space Station. Like this HOPE satellite mission launched from Japan. So, like, the missions are, like, led by one nation or something like that, but then other nations let them use their, you know, launch facilities and stuff like that.
Hmm.
And I think it's cool that there's missions from the States, missions from China, a mission from United Arab Emirates, like, all headed towards Mars to explore it.
Right.
I think that's really cool.
That is really cool. I wouldn't think that would be the case, just because I would think that countries would want to do it like independently, so that like since it's such a monumental like milestone achievement, these kind of things, that they would want to be like, we did this on our own. But I like that it's more of a like global effort and celebration.
I do entertain the idea that maybe there is at a time when there's so much conflict here on Earth, that maybe like this the exploration of space will be the true kind of uniting factor in our countries. Something that gets in the way of that, though, is that it's really expensive to do that kind of stuff. And so when there's lots of problems here on Earth, as there are currently, it's really tough for governments to justify all the time and energy and technology and money it takes
spending
to go to
space. Spending money on that. Yeah, that makes sense.
So how we can rationalize that, I don't know how that will work, but...
Well, that reminds me of that really interesting podcast that we listened to with... I always want to call him Seth Rogen, but it's not. It's Joe Rogan, the Joe Rogan Experience, and Elon Musk, and how he was basically... He was saying, like, I don't have time to do anything else. I need to be focused on getting us to space. Like, that is, like, all I need to be focused on right now. So, I mean, people like him who have the money to do that, then, you know, that's good that he can still stay focused on that. Where, like, where you said governments need to have so many areas of focus, so they can't devote all of their time and money to that, but he can, so.
And that's probably where we'll start to see more privatization of space exploration.
Who else did something? There's someone else, not Elon Musk, but some other private...
Jeff Bezos has a space company.
Oh, okay.
There's SpaceX from Elon Musk, and then Blue Horizon or Blue something.
And are they sort of in competition with each other? Like, hey, we're both rich and white, and we're making space stuff.
I don't know. I think they got together and said, hey.
Hey, you're rich and white. I'm rich and white. Why don't we do space stuff?
I think that's probably what happened.
And see who can do it better.
I think that's probably what happened.
Who has more money, though, out of those two?
Ooh, great question. Who's richer? I think Jeff Bezos is.
Should we consult the Oracle?
Ask the Oracle.
My Siri's not working, so I'm going to just search it. Jeff Bezos net worth. Okay, so this says Jeff Bezos net worth. Oh, look, it has both. Forbes pegged Bezos net worth at $184.6 billion and Musk at $177.2 billion. So yeah, Bezos is still ahead, but that was 2021. Okay, so this looks like wait a minute, these are conflicting things. Hold on. Sorry about this.
They probably go back and forth.
Yeah, it looks like that's why. It looks like maybe they go back and forth. They're like pretty neck and neck, so that's what they both look like.
I know what they look like. Okay. That's the guy from Apple.
Oh.
Oh my
God. God, sorry guys. This is a podcast of misinformation.
Jeff Bezos is the one that looks like the villain Lex Luthor from Superman.
Yeah, he's not great to look at. Anyway.
So space exploration, very cool. And we should, if that's something that you're into, look for the HOPE satellite that's headed towards Mars and is set to arrive in a couple days.
That's amazing. I love that. Thanks for sharing that.
Sure. What article did you bring?
Well, I brought something from the Sunday New York Times.
You're fancy.
I'm so fancy, and I'm super, like, up to date. This is breaking news
today. This is breaking. Wow. All
right. This is also a paper version. This is an actual newspaper, in case anyone listening forgot what that is. We get an actual newspaper delivered on our front door on Sunday, the New York Times. The article I found is called Mushrooms Are Magic. Do you think it's talking about psychedelic mushrooms or something else? Just off the title.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yes. Okay. Psychedelic mushrooms.
It's not.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, so this is talking about the recent trend of growing mushrooms in your home that became, I mean, it's more to that, more than that, but it starts out talking about how during the pandemic, you know, people went through different phases, making sourdough bread, blah, 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 and mushrooms became really popular. And so you can buy all these different mushroom kits online or probably, I don't know, maybe like Lowe's or a gardening store, and you can make mushrooms on your counter. And so it's talking about that. This person, the article's by Zoe Schlanger, I don't know, something. Talking about how their Instagram feed a couple months into lockdown was turning into mushroom grow kits. They're basically compressed sawmill waste, which have been implanted with mycelium of wood-eating fungus. And that's how the mushrooms grow, out of these little bags of sawdust. So, interesting fact, sales of introductory mushroom growing supplies increased 400% during the pandemic. That's a lot. Mushrooms are mysterious and ephemeral. I underline that because that word is magic. Love it. Do you know what it means?
Existing without, like, outside of the physical bounds. Like in that's a spiritual type?
That's an excellent guess. I think you might be thinking of ethereal.
Oh.
Ephemeral is lasting for a very short time. Interestingly, they say that animals are growing mushrooms is more like taking care of and growing animals than plants. They're so complex. Let me just read you a couple more interesting things about these mushrooms. So, you know, of course, there's a lot of different, like, mushroom history, if you will. Like, Asian countries, they've long been prized for medicinal and ritualistic purposes. Rich mushroom foraging traditions. It had me thinking about how people in the Pacific Northwest are pretty into mushroom foraging because the climate there is really good for it with all the rain. Especially chanterelles, people were really excited about. And one time a coworker gave me probably like $50 worth of chanterelles that they had foraged because they had so many. Chanterelles are really expensive. In France, this is interesting, every town has its own mushroom expert trained by the government. The mushroom market is expected to reach $86.6 billion by 2025. So there's a lot of import-export that goes on with mushrooms. They're pretty amazing in terms of how like resilient they are. They can just come up out of a sidewalk and they can crack it despite how soft they are. So it's really still unknown how they can have so much force to be able to grow so quickly, you know, and with such power, given like how tiny and soft they are. So they can grow very quickly overnight. At one point he's talking about his apartment and how like they can sporulate. So he had different kinds of mushrooms and then they sort of somehow like combined or like got into each other's like bags and habitats, and like it's kind of crazy. He called it a mushroom orgy. So yeah, he said it got like so out of control they couldn't keep up with eating them because they just grow so quickly. They talk about how there's promise for the mushrooms to be able to like clean up the environment in some ways, environmental waste, because they can eat toxins in the environment, so they do have like a world-saving potential, which I thought was really interesting. There are lion's mane mushrooms that have been shown to help memory loss in mice, and psilocybin is found in mushrooms. It's a compound, and it has been promising for treating depression.
Mm. Yeah, psilocybin, I think.
Psilocybin.
I think that's the magic mushroom type stuff, like microdosing.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought microdosing was about LSD.
Well, I think they microdose. I think there's a trend.
They microdose magic mushrooms, too.
Yeah, for both.
Magic mushrooms.
It's like taking a real small bit, so you're not tripping really hard, but you're kind of like getting that mood-boosting,
yeah,
euphoric kind of feeling.
Interesting. So, you know, the last thing I'll leave you with is this quote: the more you talk about mushrooms, the more you want to talk about mushrooms. And I thought that was true, because I got so excited when I read this. I feel excited when I'm talking about it now. I love mushrooms. I love to cook with mushrooms. I think they're delicious. My therapist actually told me that they do have like a vitamin therapeutic component of vitamin D, which we really need in the winter. And she said, if you buy mushrooms from the supermarket, you can like set them in a windowsill and they'll absorb more of the, even more of the sunlight, so that when you cook them, you get like even more vitamin D. So I just thought it was so interesting how, you know, they just grow so quickly and so easily. So, you know, even if you're not someone who considers yourself to have a green thumb, you could certainly just grow these on your counter and just have the benefit and satisfaction of growing some of your own food.
I guess I always thought that mushrooms had to be grown in a deep, dark cave somewhere.
No, that seems to not be the case. They seem sort of like sunflowers, where they can just grow like anywhere. It's amazing. So I was thinking maybe we could buy a mushroom kit.
Okay.
And try it.
That sounds like a
report back.
Great idea. I do love mushrooms.
I did want to know what your favorite mushroom was, though, or like if you can think of a favorite mushroom meal that you have.
I like portobello mushrooms, the big ones, and I like to put them, I like to either grill them or saute them in a pan until they're soft. Well, first, marinate them for a few hours in Italian dressing.
Yes.
And then put them in a pan till they're soft, and then put them on a nice big hamburger bun, put a piece of provolone cheese on top, lettuce, tomato.
Vegetarian burger.
Portobello burgers.
Yeah.
So good.
Really good grilled, too. They can really stand up, too. I think mushrooms have a good, like, meaty component, so I think they make a really great meat substitute. I recently discovered that I love like crispy mushrooms. So either like frying them in a pan in olive oil, or like doing olive oil and baking them in the oven until they get kind of crispy texture. They're so good.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Wow, what a news segment. We have lots of space news, biology news.
Yeah.
We're a couple of regular scientists.
Regular nerds here.
And chefs.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's take a quick break. We will be right back with the main event.
Oh.
The main event. And we will both bring something to the table that is amazing and or relevant in some way. And yeah, be exciting. Cool. See you back in un momento. And we're back. Since I did the first news article, do you want to share what you brought?
Yeah, I'll do that. I'd also like to share that it's still snowing. I looked out over the break. It's coming down pretty hard. I'm so excited.
Is it sticking?
Yeah, it's sticking. Yeah. We shoveled the car out. Well, I say we, Steve, shoveled the car out yesterday with a dustpan, because we live in an apartment, so we don't have a shovel. We will need to buy a shovel since we're going to own a house soon. But that was the first time we moved the car in like 9-10 days, and now it's getting covered again, so it'll just sit for another 9-10 days probably.
I have to say, I was pretty proud of myself that I was able to shovel the car out from being almost completely buried in with a dustpan.
Yeah, amazing.
I'm pretty awesome.
You are so resourceful. Yeah.
Yep, I'm pretty great.
Anyway, that's just a little side note.
Hooray, snow!
Hooray, snow! I love living in a city, though, where even if it wasn't snowing, there are times where we, like, don't drive or touch the car for, like, a week, and, like, I forget where it's parked, so that's pretty exciting. Anywho, today I brought a cute, cute little book, and it is very little and super cute, and it's called Convenience Store Woman by Sayaka Murata. It's a novel and a national bestseller. She is the author of many books, and so this book has been translated from Japanese to English by Ginny Tapley Takamori. And she's translated a dozen Japanese writers, including Ryu Murakami. Not to be confused with Haruki Murakami. And she lives at the foot of a mountain in eastern Japan. So this book, how did I find out about this book? Oh, I heard about this book on a podcast that I listened to called Women Who Travel. And they, a couple times over 2020, were talking about books that they were reading and how that was kind of helping them escape or travel, if you will, when they couldn't travel during the pandemic. So I heard about this. I don't often read a lot of Japanese authors, so I thought that would be a good little diversion for me, and it sounded really interesting. I know you've read quite a lot of Haruki Murakami books, and I've read a couple that I've really enjoyed. Some of them are a little too like strange for me, and I can't really get into them, but I really did like his book, What I Talk About When I Talk About Running, and also the Colorless Suzuki? Suzuri?
I can't remember.
Anyway, interesting book. So I highly recommend maybe branching out, reading some Japanese authors. So Convenience Store Woman was really interesting. So she is a woman, I guess around my age, kind of in her like late 30s. And she works in a convenience store. So it's exactly, you know, as the name says. She has worked there for, I think 20 years at the time the book's starting. And so the book kind of grapples with, like, her decision to do something really weird. Like, she's single. She doesn't really date. She just works at this convenience store. She lives alone. She kind of dedicates and gives her whole life to the convenience store. And she's so, like, loyal to it, a star employee. She always shows up early, gives 100%, and she just absolutely loves working at the convenience store, loves it, and the way she talks about it is so just sweet, and you know, you can just tell how much she loves it. But what she's grappling with is that she's doing something weird. Like, she's going against, like, the grain, and she's not doing, like, the norm. So she's not, you know, getting married and having kids, and she has these moments where she meets up with, like, her sister and friends from her high school, and they've all, like, gotten married and, like, have kids and or have, like, what they consider to be, like, acceptable and, like, successful careers for women of her age. And so she really struggles with feeling like an outsider and, like, there's something wrong with her and she's sick, and they sort of treat her that way too, and, like, when are you gonna, like, give this up and, like, move on with your life and really do something with your life. And so she kind of finds herself making some decisions that she thinks are going to get her accepted by society and her friends and family, but that ultimately take her away from working at the convenience store. And so then it becomes the struggle of her being really like miserable and hating her life, sort of, because she's made a decision to do what she thinks everyone else is doing and what she should be doing. So it was really interesting. I think I identified a lot with it just because I have kind of felt like that at times, just with like my choice to not have kids. And so, you know, it's not something I talk about a lot with like a lot of people, like some very close friends, but you know, to make a choice like that, that I think people find weird sometimes. Scrubby's snoring, sorry. I don't know if you heard that, but he's being a peaceful baby today, but he was just snoring. It's so cute. But anyway, I have often felt like people may look at me like there's something wrong with me, like, oh, like, why doesn't she have kids? Like, what's wrong with her? Is she, like, have some sort of, like, medical issue that she can't? And, like, no, I've just chosen to not do that because it's not something that I want to do. And I, whether I'm projecting this or not, I have often felt like how the woman in the book describes feeling like an outsider and just like you're not doing what society like says that you should do or wants you to do. You know, we've talked a little bit today and last time about like advertisements and things, and just thinking about it from that perspective, you know, like most of the like advertisements that you see about like parenting and being a mom, like kind of build that up as like it is what you're supposed to be doing. And so I think that our society really does place a high importance on that for women and kind of what defines women in a lot of ways. So it is weird to like choose to go against that and to feel like you have to sort of defend yourself a little bit, like for making that choice.
I think also there's a lot of importance, and maybe in Japanese culture too, about achievement and career, and the idea that you work at a convenience store is kind of like being a failure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she absolutely talks about that. And it's kind of sad because, you know, I think that the Japanese working culture also places a high, and like other Asian cultures place a high importance on like working so hard and so many hours. And so it's kind of sad because she does do that and she does really give it her all and just goes above and beyond. And, you know, everyone at the store really relies on her. So it is really sad to think like that she is working so hard, but yet not at a job that everyone thinks that she should be at.
It's timely too, because over the past year, we've kind of come up with this new term, essential workers.
Yeah, that's true.
And the people that have been working at our convenience stores and grocery stores, you know, places where we have to go and get essential items, you know, have now kind of come into a bit of a spotlight, for better or worse.
Exactly. And on a lighter note, like, it did make me feel super nostalgic for convenience stores when we lived in Korea, and even for like bodegas here, and just like the value and the, like the place that they serve in our communities, because she talks about that a lot, about the regulars that come in and, you know, get lunch or get like little things here and there that they need. Like, I think that convenience stores and bodegas are like overlooked as being like, oh, like they're kind of junky and like you can't get anything good there, but they serve such a purpose, especially in some like, you know, underserved communities and cities. Like, that's where a lot of people will buy a lot of their groceries. And so it kind of made me feel like nostalgic for little stores like that.
So you said you heard about it on the Women Who Travel podcast.
Yeah, it's a great podcast.
So what elements of it make it a travel book?
I think that's a great question. I mean, I think just the way that it talks about all the different foods. It's foods that we wouldn't normally have here in America that are like very, Japanese. Like they talk a lot about the rice balls, which are similar to like the triangle gimbaps that would be at a Korean grocery store. And so they talk about the food specials and, what people are buying and just the different like people and characters that come in and small city scenes, but not as much, but it does really transport you to like traveling to a Japanese convenience store. So yeah, I would say that's the travel aspect of it.
Cool.
Yeah, and it's so cute. Look at this cute little book.
It does
book.
Have a very cute little cover.
Yeah, it has a little like rice ball on the front that is, you know, shaped like a cute little lady's head. And it's very short. It's a very quick read. It's only like 160 pages. So
very nice.
Recommend. This is Convenience Store Woman by Sayaka Murata.
Fantastic. Thank you. You brought a good one this week.
Yeah, super good.
And as always with all of our books, I'll put it on our Gaze Into the Blue Light podcast Goodreads list, where on the Goodreads profile, you can see all the books that we've talked about on this podcast if you're interested in checking some of those out. Thanks for bringing that. All right, yeah. I guess it's my turn.
It's your turn.
So this week, I brought a movie that has been on my Netflix list since it came out in December 2020. I've kept meaning to watch it, and I finally did this week. It's called The Midnight Sky, with George Clooney, directed by George Clooney.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Starring a heavily bearded George Clooney. I got some serious beard envy off of Clooney's beard, which looks like a bird's nest. It's pretty epic
it's
beard.
Pretty intense.
It's also kind of like a co-star in the movie. Mm. There are some scenes where he's outside in the snow and it's like covered and caked in ice. And like, I couldn't help but just stare at it and be like,
amazing.
Damn, how did they do that?
Maybe it'll be up for like best supporting role.
How did they make his beard so amazingly covered in ice?
Wow.
It was really pretty amazing. But all in all, it was kind of like mediocrely received. 51% on Rotten Tomatoes. Ooh. Which is kind of a
meat. That's a bummer.
I think it's just a medium score. For a brief synopsis, it kind of bounces between two separate stories.
Mm-hmm.
It is one side focused on George Clooney's character, who is a scientist that is in Antarctica, I want to say. One of the poles, anyway, where it's very cold, and he's at a research station there, and there is some kind of unnamed, undescribed event that happens that is catastrophic to the entire world, and so it's kind of like some kind of apocalypse has happened, and he is one of the only people left living, while these high levels of radiation keep like slowly creeping up. So he is still alive, and he's one of the last people. And then the secondary kind of story that it bounces between is a ship of astronauts that had left to go explore one of Jupiter's moons, I think, as a possible second Earth.
Oh.
And they went to explore it, and they're on their way back to Earth. And so it's kind of his character, Augustine, I think is his name.
Oh,
Augustine.
That's a good name.
Yeah. And it's kind of like his race to get in contact with the ship that is on its way back to Earth. And on the ship are these five astronauts that are really looking forward to coming back to Earth, but they're scared because they keep trying to contact mission control and all these other places, and no one is answering because, of course, there has been the event.
Oh. Ooh.
So Augustine, the scientist, needs to tell them not to come to Earth. So there's that, like, that's kind of the main driving of the plot. From a personal sci-fi fan view, I would say I liked it.
Oh.
I'm not going to say I loved it.
Yeah, you don't seem enthusiastic about it.
It was very...
Your facial expression's like, meow.
It was very dramatic. Like, lots of drama. It moved very slowly, ponderously, and thoughtfully. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's up for a Golden Globe for the musical score.
Oh.
So the soundtrack is up for the Golden Globe. Wow. And it was really a strong score that went along with it. It was very dramatic, and it, like, kind of like transitions between what you would imagine life would really be like at a research station when you're all by yourself, or on a spaceship trying to return to Earth. There's, like, moments of levity and fun and oddness balanced out by, like, very horrible things happening. Ooh. And everything kind of, like, is balanced out in that way. Like, there's a time when things are kind of silly, and then things turn dark.
Okay.
Which is, it feels realistic in a way of, like, you know, that's how life is. Fun times are balanced out. But the music is, like, fun, and then it starts to turn a little bit, and you're like, oh boy, something's about to go down. So I thought it led the audience along. But it was very serious. It was very, like, philosophical and thoughtful, and on both sides of the coin, I liked how it was balanced that way of, like, people coming back to Earth and then George Clooney being on Earth.
Nice.
Not George Clooney himself, but his character.
It's fine.
He's kind of like a, I think, misanthrope would be the right word. He's, like, doesn't have real good social skills. He kind of, is like a scientist that just went fully... There are some flashbacks to his early life. And he went, like, full all in on his career and his science and left a wife and child kind of in the wake of that. And so he's older now, heavily bearded, and kind of paying the price for that in a way and kind of reckoning with that now that he knows that his time on Earth is coming to an end.
Oh, wow.
Then balanced out with the kind of, like, hopefulness of the people that are returning, and they're really excited about seeing their family again and their friends again, and they kind of have those hopes dashed.
Wow.
So those kind of, like, broad themes of the movie. I would say if you're a sci-fi fan, there are going to be a lot of throwbacks and connections to previous space movies that have been made.
Okay.
Intergalactic. Like, what was the one with Sandra Bullock? Gravity, I think it was.
Yeah.
The Martian,
but that wasn't sci-fi. That was more realistic. But when you were talking about the moments of being alone, it made me think of The Martian.
Yeah, there are... It solidly places itself within the sci-fi genre. But pretty realistic in that it's, like, near future.
Yeah, I mean,
kind of time.
Kind of ties in with your article, right? Did you mean to do that?
I did sort of mean to do that, but then I forgot. Thank you for reminding me. But yeah, it's you know, because rovers and satellites could be returning from far planets with information about what life might be like there. So it's pretty realistic. The spacewalk scene there. There are some scenes that are really well done. Like, all in all, from beginning to end, the movie was kind of like 5 out of 10.
So, yeah, lines up with the Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I would say it was like, yeah, you know, all right. That was 2 hours of my life that...
that I can't get back.
I can't get back, but I don't feel like it was a total waste.
You're not going to just go to bed and cry after that.
It was worth it for a handful of scenes.
Okay.
One, it's worth it for the spacewalk scene.
Okay.
So they're the ship is coming back and they are trying to get in touch with Earth, and they kind of run into some asteroid type field thing that like damages their ship, so they've got to go out and work on it, which scenes are always crazy,
so
right?
Intense,
so stressful.
Oh, I get so stressed.
And there is a scene with blood, like droplets of blood in zero gravity, that is like crazy. I've never seen anything like that before, and it was very well done.
Okay.
Very well done. Gotta say that.
That sounds terrifying.
And then the scenes where George Clooney is by himself and then finds that he has a companion are pretty compelling too. It's pretty interesting. He does a great job of like being this kind of like lonely old scientist man.
Okay.
Who discovers that there may be someone else.
There's life.
There. In the Arctic Research Station.
Oh, okay. Not life on Mars.
But no. Life another the being with him at the station. And then it's worth it for the solid ending. I feel like it ends on a... It ends and wraps up in a good way.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe so, should I watch it? Would I have any interest in it? Or did you, when you watched it, were you like, oh God, I'm glad I'm watching this alone, because Nikki would hate it.
That's a good question. I think it balances out enough that it meets the sci-fi need for those people that love space movies and like kind of like post-apocalyptic stories about what happens when bad things happen on Earth and how we react to it. It meets that need, but it also has a heavy, heavy dramatic layer.
Yeah, it sounds like it has like a social emotional, like life assessment element that probably would engage someone like me who likes those kind of things in a movie. Like when you're talking about him, like thinking about his life and what it means, and
right. Yeah, I think for people that enjoy thinking about humans and how they relate to one another and what it would be like to be on a spaceship with four other people for a really long time.
Ooh. I kind of feel like you and I are on our own, well, and Scrappy have been sort of like on our own little planet or spaceship for this past year.
I think that's an interesting connection because...
It really is.
They... Not to spoil things, but I already said something bad happens on Earth, right? And this ship is on its way back.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really strong scene where they get their first view of Earth as they're coming back. And they're like, that's not good.
Oh.
Right? So they can tell from space that bad things happen.
Oh, they can tell
Earth.
From space. That's really not good.
And so there is kind of this like dark parallel to... You know, us being in our own little spaceships and like, when are we gonna step out into the world and like take our masks off and be like, what is this world like? And it does feel like it's just really bad. Whether, you know, how accurate that is or not is debatable, but there is this prevailing sense of like fear about what's outside.
Right. Like if we step outside of our own little like space capsule here, like we could die. Like you feel like that sometimes.
Yeah, it feels like
going
that.
Out. So
yeah, there are some parallels. So yeah, I would say it's worth a watch.
Okay.
But not with the expectation that you're gonna be blown away by anything. But it is worth a watch. And if you're a fan of epic beards, George Clooney.
I'm a fan of George Clooney. I think he's an excellent actor. What, was this his debut directing role?
No, he's directed other movies.
Oh, he has?
I don't know what they are, but I think he
interesting.
Has directed other movies.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
You also, quick side note, got me thinking about one of my favorite songs, is Life on Mars.
Mm.
I like two versions. I like the original version, Bowie, of course, but I also really like a version by an artist named Aurora, A-U-R-O-R-A, Life on Mars. That song is so, I would say that song is ethereal, to which you mentioned earlier, ephemeral, ethereal. It's haunting. It's just a very like haunting song that would make me think about what it would like to be alone on Mars.
Cool. I'll put the link for it in the show's description.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So we talked about the movie that I watched, Midnight Sky on Netflix, starring George Clooney. You talked about the book Convenience Store Woman. Mm-hmm. I'll put links for that info in our show's description. And thanks for telling us about a good song and about the Women Who Travel podcast. I did not know about that one.
It's a great one.
Before we go, I want to remind you that this podcast is 100% listener supported. That means no ads. I took them off. The one ad. So this podcast is supported by listeners like you. You can support us monthly. You can find a link to on how to support us with a little bit each month. You can find that in the show's description. Or if a quick one-time donation to help us buy some coffee is more your style, you can find us on Venmo at GIBL Podcast. Much appreciated to those that have been supporting our little podcast project since November.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
Good for you. Since early You've November. Been doing this.
Finally, you can help our show out by sharing this episode with someone that you think might like it. You can leave us a rating and a review wherever you're listening to your podcasts. You can subscribe, follow, and on Spotify you can, and Apple, you can get notifications when a new episode drops. We're also on Twitter at GIBL Podcast. Thanks for joining us. We will see you soon.
Enjoy your Super Bowl Sunday.
Woohoo!